You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 2nd of September 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, unfortunately, my co-host Grandpa Dan can't make it today and he won't be recording a Parish of the Patriots next week, but we are hoping to have him back the week after that. So you're just going to have to put up with myself today, and once again, we have some transgender stories. I mean, it really does seem to be turning into the Daily Transitionalist on Fridays, but there are just so many transgender issues which are making the headlines recently. And the first news story that we have here, it's about a week old, but it's a particularly important one, I think, and it's about children. Dressing up, that's what it used to be, children dressing up, but now it's transgender models and drag kids. And we have this news story here today because it's the world's youngest so-called transgender model at 10 years old. Her parents say she was born with a fierce and confident sense of identity, and that self-assurance can clearly be seen on the catwalk where 10-year-old Noella McMyer has become the world's youngest transgender model. So you've got a 10-year-old there, a very sexualized 10-year-old wearing makeup and putting themselves off, trying to put themselves across as an adult model of the opposite gender. Noella, who fashion insiders say could make her first million in the next year, first identified as transgender at 2.5, nearing 3, according to her biological mother Dee, who now identifies as a trans masculine male, and cites Noella as an inspiration. So they cite the child as the inspiration rather than the child citing the parent. And obviously the child is looking at the parents as inspiration because they're basically two women, with one, the actual mother of the child, who is dressing as a male and pretending to be a male, and the other one is a female. So what we really have there is two lesbians, one of which dresses as a man. And then at 2 years old, they claim that the mother's child came out as a transgender, of course, with no influence from the parents, of course. I mean, what's the chances of that being a coincidence, that the mother is a transgender in a relationship with another woman, and then the child also wants to be like the mother, also wants to be different, has obviously been around transgenders and lesbians, and surprise, surprise, they start saying, I want to be a little girl. I mean, this is somebody that was born a boy, and they're then saying they want to be a little girl. And of course, that's because they've been surrounded by girls and they haven't had a male role model. In an exclusive interview with the Mail on Sunday, Dee said, my spouse and I are both non-binary. So they're basically masculine and feminine, but their biological gender is still female. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being, you know, having masculine traits and having feminine traits as well. I mean, we all have the capacity to be a little bit like the opposite gender, but it doesn't mean we are the opposite gender. What it's there for is so that we have better understanding of each other. And what this couple have confused it for is that they're not supposed to actually have a gender at all. In terms of gender identity, Noella came out before either of us. She was born with a fierce and confident sense of identity. So what you have there is the parent doing what the child says instead of the child doing what the parent says. I mean, as far as transgenderism is concerned, it's rather like the child being the backseat driver, isn't it? It first started at 2.5, nearing 3. Someone would say to her that she was a cute boy, and she would snap back and exclaim, "I'm not a boy, I'm a girl." And I wonder why that could be. Could it be because the two women that are down as being her parents were not particularly flattering about males? I mean, we know that a lot of lesbians are lesbians because they've had unfortunate experiences with horrible men, and they may have been abused or molested or simply just very, very badly treated by men. And that's why they become lesbians. And obviously, if you've been badly treated by the opposite gender, then in your discussion, you're going to be highlighting the bad points, aren't you? Not the good points. So again, it's because this biological boy didn't have a male role model there. And because instead of that, he had two women that have had bad experiences with men, they're not going to want to be a boy. And if they've been told that gender is fluid and you can be whatever gender you want, then clearly that's why they're saying, "I want to be a girl." This story of our times has sparked widespread concern. One campaigner described it as abhorrent and suggested Noella's mother was actively pushing her to become trans. Noella socially transitioned at 4, and the family changed her legal birth certificate from boy to girl when she was 6. So they're basically setting the child up for castration, for penis removal, for the opposite sex's hormones, and a life of dysphoria, not thinking that they are the opposite sex when in actual fact they cannot actually change to the opposite sex. So in some states, this would be classed as child abuse, but that's not what's going on here. They're being promoted here. This is being promoted as a wonderful thing. She hit the headlines in America last week when she became the youngest transgender model to walk the runway at a fashion show in New York. And now she is being bombarded with modeling offers and will walk the catwalk at Paris Fashion Week this year. And we know what goes on with this modeling. These models get offered lots of money to sleep with men that have lots of money. There's a lot of sexual degeneracy that goes on with this. So they're basically introducing her into a world where it is very likely that the child is going to be abused. A Hollywood agent said, "Noella is a phenomenon. She's only 10, but represents so much in terms of where the world is now." Well, I wouldn't disagree with that. I mean, that is exactly where we are at now. 10-year-olds dressing up sexually as adults as drag queens, and perverted men being turned on by this, because as we'll see later on here, that is what the result of this is. A lot of the support for this comes from that area. And of course, there are gullible people that think, well, this is just about inclusion. It's just about making these poor people that have such sad childhoods, it's just making their childhood better for them, and it's just giving them role models. And that may be the case in a very small number of them, but a larger number of them, I think, are being abused here. And they're, you know, just even if just a small amount of them regret being castrated and having their genitals chopped off, surely that's reason enough to not allow this to go on until somebody is the age of 18. And they're saying, well, they need to start this off early because then the signs of the other gender don't really come in during puberty and they become a more convincing transgender. But again, that is for the benefit of the people that want to go with the transgenders, isn't it? That's for their benefit that they turn out to be a more convincing transgender. It's not for the transgender's benefit, because they're always going to know that they're not actually the opposite sex, the sex that they want to be. The Hollywood agent said, "We are seeing more transgender models, and she is the ultimate in terms of being a woke role model. She is so confident for someone so young. She is capable of making $1 million to $2 million in the next year." And it's really unsettling to see this picture of this child. You know that it's a boy. They're dressed up as a girl, and it's sexualized. And of course, the people that are doing this will say, well, this is not sexualized. They're just wearing makeup. But makeup is in itself sexualized. I have a quote here from The Guardian, and the article is called "Why Do Girls Wear Makeup?" And they say, "Evolutionary psychologists have it that, as with so many things, makeup comes down to sex. Women tend to have darker eyes and lips than men, and makeup enhances those sex differences. Furthermore, the desirable qualities a man looks for in a woman, largely related to reproductive fitness, are said to be amplified by makeup. So that what the child is doing is advertising that they are reproductively fit. They're advertising that they are fit for reproduction, that they're available for sex. That's what the makeup does. Beauty ideals vary from culture to culture, but there are some universal markers of attractiveness. Facial symmetry and an even skin tone imply good health, while youthfulness denotes fertility. Plump lips and flushed cheeks, meanwhile, are signs of sexual arousal. So your scarlet lipstick and pink blusher might just be giving that random man in the bar a subconscious signal that you're ready for a night of passion. So you have a child here of 10 years old with red lipstick, making the lips look plump, blusher on the cheeks, making the cheeks look flushed. And as it says here, that will give random men in the bar the subconscious signal that they're ready for a night of passion. And it's not just this young transgender model that is doing this. We are now encouraged to lend our support to so-called drag kids, where they're dressing up as drag queens, highly sexualized. I mean, not just wearing makeup, which they could use the excuse for, oh, we're just trying to make the child look better. In actual fact, what they're doing is making the child look sexually fertile. They're actually amplifying that with the drag queen phenomenon. I don't know how they can get away with this. I mean, this is what makeup is for. Little boys should not be wearing makeup. If they are, then this is what's happening, basically. You've got homosexual men that are turned on by that. And that is the reason for wearing makeup, so that you send out these signals that you are ready for sex, basically. It's disgusting that this is going on with children. It emerged that Noella's biological father has been airbrushed out of the media profiles published in the US last week. Timothy McCord, a Chicago-based scientist, was so against her transition that he allegedly tried to force the child into boy's pajamas and fractured her arm. I mean, this may have led to these problems with her not wanting to be a boy anyway, or the child not wanting to be a boy anyway, because the father fractured her arm. I mean, that's very unfortunate. He was visiting at the time. He and Dee were separated. So he gave this lesbian woman a child, and then the lesbian woman brought the child up and to be, I guess, gender fluid or non-binary, because they say they were non-binary. And then the child started identifying with being a female instead of a male. What a surprise. According to legal papers, McCord pleaded guilty to a child endangerment charge. Last week, he said he had not seen Noella or his son Levi since, adding, "I tried to get back into their lives, but it was too contentious and stressful for everyone." Dee, who has been married to Ray, a 32-year-old biological female who has also identified as transgender since 2019, now has a baby who is being raised as non-binary, and Dee refers to the baby as they be. And this is terrible. I mean, talk about the confusion that is going to arise in this child, not knowing what gender they are, not being encouraged to be happy in the gender that they are. They're just not going to be very good at being a girl, not very good at being a boy, and they're going to be unhappy. Parents should be raising their children in the opposite way to this. They should be encouraging them to be happy in the gender that they are in. If you bring them up to be non-binary, you're just encouraging them to have gender dysphoria, aren't you? To feel that they're no good at actually being the gender that they are, because half the time when they were a child, they were being encouraged to do things that the gender that they're not does. I mean, you really want to be, as a child or as a little boy, say, you want to be training to be the very best man that you can be when you're an adult. And if somebody's being raised as non-binary, they're going to miss out on half of that training, aren't they? Because they're going to be encouraged to do the female training. So when they get to be an adult male, they're going to feel, I'm no good at this. These other adult males are much better at it than me. And they're going to get depression, and they could get gender dysphoria. Sinead Watson, who changed gender from female to male at 23 and then changed her mind and detransitioned 4 years later, said, "We are seeing more and more parents with Munchausen syndrome by proxy. It is not the kids who are trans. It is the parents who want them to be trans." And it's nearly always these liberal mothers that do this. You feel very, very sorry for the fathers. I mean, what could be worse as a father than thinking that the mother of your child is going to cut his penis off? I mean, it's horrific, and that we go along with this and cheer it on. Now, I have another article here which is to do with the same thing. This is a detransitioner, which is somebody that regrets going through the operation and is now left with a mangled body and a confused psyche afterwards. A detransitioner has told how he was brainwashed into having gender reassignment surgery after believing himself to be a woman trapped in the wrong body. He was given a referral letter by Fenway Health in Massachusetts, which he claims has been taken over by biased pro-trans activists. The surgery itself was performed by Dr. Sherman Leese of the Philadelphia Center for Transgender Surgery, and Leese is regarded as the United States' most experienced gender reassignment surgeon. But soon after the operation was complete, in 2015, in his mid-20s, Shapeshifter, that's the name of the detransitioner, quickly realized he had made a terrible mistake and that he was just a gay man who enjoyed presenting in a feminine way. The procedures he has undergone, which include the removal of his penis and the creation of a neo-vagina, are irreversible. They have left him with osteoporosis, scoliosis, a vagina which his body believes is a wound and which it tries to close up, as well as a host of mental health conditions, including depression, and a reduced sex drive. And I don't understand what these transgenders are thinking is going to happen if they stop taking testosterone and they start taking estrogen, that they're not going to have a sex drive. It's testosterone that is responsible for the sex drive. So if they're sexualized and they like men and they want to have sex with men and they want to present as a woman, but then they start taking estrogen, that they're not going to have that sex drive anymore. So that's just going to disappear. And as it says here, when they have this operation, the body believes it to be a wound and it tries to close the wound up all the time. Of course, that's going to leave you with mental health conditions. You're going to have mental health conditions from taking the opposite gender's hormones. And you're also going to be left with osteoporosis, which is when your bones don't have enough calcium in them. They don't have enough strength in them. It's something that happens to elderly people, and it now happens to transgenders as well. And this neo-vagina that this person had, it was created by one of the very best gender reassignment surgeons there is, and yet it just continues to close up, and it was a complete failure. During the interview, which has been posted to YouTube and received almost 500,000 views, Shape explained how the new vagina that had been constructed for him using tissue from his penis fell far short of expectations and left him unable to have intercourse. "I was happy maybe for a month or two, but then got even more depressed after surgery. My neo-vagina started constricting. I thought I was going to spread my legs and get effed, and that never really happened after I gave away my penis. I was online telling people how depressed I was. A lot of people thought it was because of the surgery, but I had no energy. I was so lethargic. I had brain fog and no sex drive at all. I then found that all the tranny chasers stopped following me, and I was competing with other women for men. I just wanted to have my surgery and then blend in and complete my transition. When I started taking estrogen, I had no sex drive. I went from enjoying sex to avoiding it. I miss just being an average dude and obsessing over sex, money, and my career. It sucked being heteronormative and doing the whole emotional thing. Now I feel like a man trapped in a woman lookalike body. I will never be able to get my penis back, which is extremely traumatic for me. I want it back, and I can't. Sex is traumatic for me now because I've had botched surgeries." Shape says he even dreams about having a penis. Well, before his first transition, he would dream about having a vagina. So this is the situation that these people can end up in. This child that is being encouraged to think that they are transgender, this is what they've got to look forward to, ending up having their penis cut off and a fake vagina, which the body thinks is a wound, being put in its place, and the chances are of it not actually functioning in the way that they think, because it's not a vagina. It's a wound where the person's penis used to be. I mean, you have to have compassion for these people that have done this. I mean, they must have such a strong belief that they are actually the different gender trapped within their body, that it convinces them that if they could only just make themselves look that little bit more like a woman, they would really be a woman. And that isn't what happens. And they lose the sex drive, which is what was partially what was encouraging them to think like this in the first place. And then, as it says here, all the tranny chasers aren't interested in them anymore. So they lose whatever it was that made them attractive to the sort of men that they wanted to sleep with. These detransitioners regret the surgeries, and then because they've got the surgeries, they're seen as like an enemy by these activist doctors, and then they can't even get help to revise the surgeries because trans surgeons hate detransitioners, the interviews suggested. Pretty much, Shape responded. What they don't tell you is because they've labelled them as difficult patients, but even beyond that, the one thing they don't tell you is once your first surgery didn't go right, and the second one didn't go right, after a while, nobody wants to touch other surgeons' work because they don't want to attach their name to a complicated case. Every time you go in, there is more scar tissue and more complications. So they can't get help because the surgeons that are doing this, the doctors that are doing it, they're all activists and they all want to pretend that it always goes right and nobody regrets it. So when somebody does regret it and they need help because there's a mess there, they won't touch it because they only want to be associated with transgenders for whom the surgery has gone right. Looking back, I don't think my mind was able to comprehend what was happening. Even when I was a woman, I only knew what it was like to be a man on estrogen. And now I can't go back to being a traditional man. I will never know what it is like to be a woman, at least biologically. I mean, this may seem like common sense to those of us who don't have gender dysphoria, that you cannot possibly be the opposite sex. But because of all this activism, because of all this promotion of this, because the doctors they see are activists, these poor people end up believing that they really could be just like a woman. And of course, with everybody being forced legally to refer to them as women, that's what plays into it. They're so desperate to be the opposite sex, but it's just not possible for that to happen. So they would be so much better off just being encouraged to be happy with the sex that they were born as. Shape explained how there is no long-term research as to what taking all of the artificial hormones will do to his body in the long term. I will have to have some kind of hormone in my body, so it's going to be estrogen only, because if I don't take any hormones, I already have osteoporosis and it will continue to get worse. I went almost 7 years without any hormones, and the hormones I am taking are similar to what women get during menopause. So he now has to take estrogen, and it's given him osteoporosis. And because this is only a recent thing that they started giving cross hormones to people, we have no research of showing what it's going to do to the body in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, 30 years' time. And don't forget that you've got teenagers that are doing this to themselves. They could be setting themselves up for a lifetime of pain with spinal fractures and all sorts of other problems that are associated with not having the hormone that you need. Men need to have testosterone for their bones, and women need to have estrogen. And if your body is set up for testosterone, taking estrogen is not going to be a substitute. Might make you feel a little bit more emotional and might make you grow breasts, but it's going to be doing all sorts of damage to your bones, and it's also going to take away the sex drive, which is largely responsible for a lot of why these transgenders want to be the opposite gender in the first place. Shape explained how, having undergone the surgeries, neither having a working penis nor a vagina that functions, and now required to take hormones for the rest of his life, feels like a medical experiment gone horribly wrong. Well, that's because it is an experiment. There are no studies that show that this is positive. There are no studies that even show that after having these operations, these people are happier. It's just neutral whether they're happy or sad, because so many of them end up committing suicide or getting depression afterwards. It's transphobic to say it, but after I have been through the system, I 100% feel like I was part of some cruel medical and social experiment, except nobody checked in on me, Shape explained. If I'd killed myself, I would not have even been included in any statistics. I'm sure they would just write me off as the cause being some other issue. Moreover, I've spent thousands of dollars. I've travelled across the country and did all the consultations trying to get help. Shape believes that a lot of people might reconsider having surgery in the first place if they knew of the possible complications and the regret that can follow in the moments following transitions. However, he believes it would be bad for business if surgeons alluded to such realities. And you think those two parents that we were talking about earlier, how can they really care about the child if they're not paying attention to this? They're saying they're involved in the transgender community. Well, what about the number of transgenders that detransition and that regret all of this? Surely you would want to do your best to prevent your child from being gender dysphoric if you really had concerns about them. And he's saying here that he wouldn't have even been included in the statistics. And I guess that's because he would just be down as a woman in the statistics rather than as a transgender. So I dare say a lot of them that do commit suicide, they get missed. Shape has blamed Fenway Health, an LGBT healthcare and advocacy organisation based in Boston, Massachusetts, for the position he finds himself in currently. One of the biggest mistakes I made is because I went to Fenway Health. A lot of their staff is LGBT, and one of my therapists was trans, as far as I know. Initially, I thought this would be good because she would understand me. But now looking back, she was biased. You know, it's kind of an activist hospital in a way. So the people that are involved in this, they're activists. They're only going to promote the positive side of it and not tell them about the negative side of it. I mean, that's what gender affirming care is. It means that if somebody turns up and says, I think I'm the opposite gender, you do everything that you can to convince them that they are the opposite gender, rather than doing everything you can to help them to be happy in the gender that they are. So you basically encourage them to have gender dysphoria. And if the person doesn't actually have gender dysphoria, they can end up with terrible regrets and awful damage done to their body. I feel like my life would have been better and more productive if over the last 10 years I had spent it expanding the definition of what it is to be a man instead of trying to just blend in like society wants and trying to be a heteronormative woman. And that's the right idea. You know, if you are a man, you do have feminine aspects. If you are a woman, you do have masculine aspects. And that's all it is. It's not that you are something different, that you're the opposite gender. And it really means that if you're a masculine man with feminine aspects, that maybe you would prefer a rather masculine woman rather than being homosexual. I don't really know what the future holds, but we need to go back to the science lab to work out what true trans is. Do you want to be on hormones or have surgery? I effed up my life and I could have been so much more. And it's just so sad that there are so many people like this now whose bodies are ruined, who have ended up castrated and with their genitalia removed, and there's nothing that can be done about it, and they're forced to take the opposite sex's hormones for the rest of their life. I mean, how much does that cost? How much is the cost for medical treatment for the rest of their life? Surely what we should be doing is just encouraging people to be happy in the gender that they were born as. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.